George says, I love you, ever. Christina has pretend sad emotions and really old guy wakes up. All that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast hosted by ABC.com. Well, true to the title of last night's episode, the truth came out. George was outed as a repeater by Alex, possibly ruining any chemistry Alex had with Lexi. Meredith told Lexi how she really felt about her mother, and most importantly, George told Callie the truth about his one-night stand. Of course, those were just a few of the stories from last night. Here with the full scoop, plus a preview of next week's episode, The Heart of the Matter, are Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers. The Heart of the Matter airs Thursday, October 18th at 9 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day on ABC.com.
Hi, I'm Betsy.
And I'm Shonda.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
Hi.
Hi. Isn't that, yeah. It's cloudy today, so I have to say it was a little tough to wake up.
And yeah.
My brain is a little slow.
I'm still in the morning sleepiness.
Hey, phone! As we've actually said before, Jim, who is a wonderful assistant, is no longer with us, but the wonderful Nancy now is with us.
Nancy's awesome,
and she answers the phones, and she's also just does everything else as well, but right now she's probably answering the phone because it stopped ringing. I also just want to say for the record, Nancy answers the phone really freaking fast.
Yes, she does.
That was one ring.
That was speedy.
Because sometimes we get a couple of rings with Jim, I think.
She moves fast.
She moves very, 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 very zippy in terms of her movements with phone.
Exactly.
But we're not here to talk about Nancy and the phone.
No.
Although we could clearly do that
time.
For like an hour. But
yeah.
I don't think that's really what you guys came to hear. No offense to Nancy.
No.
I think what we're here to do is talk about...
Third episode.
Oh my God. It's the third episode
already. Episode.
Time flies when you're old and tired.
Third episode of Grey's Anatomy.
Which was called Let the Truth Sting.
Let the Truth Sting.
Absolutely. And this actually episode has one of my favorite things of all time, which is really old guy.
Yeah. I have a real fondness for really old guy. And last season I sort of was like, we have to have this really old guy who just sleeps in his room and everybody eats lunch in there and he never ever wakes up. And I knew that when we put him in there that one time we were going to wake really old guy up.
You did. You actually...
Yeah.
The other thing just for the genesis of really old guy, so you guys know, is they eat in the cafeteria all the time. And if I were an intern, I would get really sick of going to the cafeteria.
We wanted a new place for them to hang out.
And also where they could be alone. Like, it used to be the tunnels where they could hang out
where
nobody
could
find them.
Yeah, they could just be a group by themselves. And they still do the tunnels, but old guy provided them with a special sort of privacy, which
exactly.
We
and by really old guy waking up and then expiring, I guess that option is gone.
Yeah.
For a little while, unless
yeah.
there's another really old guy, which
yeah.
I sort of doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd be no real point in that.
And for you trivia fans out there, it's been the same really old guy the entire time. We didn't just have, like, some really old guy in a bed before, and then he woke up and we cast somebody else.
Or we didn't just rotate a guy in
the bed. That incredibly fine actor has been laying very patiently in the bed, waiting for his moment in the sun, which I feel like he did brilliantly.
He really did. And I've got to say, when we first started casting really old guy, the instinct was people said, well, you just need someone to lie in bed. And Shonda kept saying, no, you can't have somebody just lie in bed. Because first of all, if you go back and watch old episodes and watch how really old guy did a coma, it's awesome because he actually stirs at the right moment. He does weird crap at the right moment.
He's pretty great. And then when he wakes up, he's such a good actor.
He's so good.
Just a sweet, charming.
So that's the way he calls her Blondie.
Yeah. I just love this little voice.
It's like, I want.
My name is Charlie. Charlie. I just love him. That was a real imitation of him.
No, but it definitely was not a real imitation. Both of our imitations actually stunk, I think. But that's okay. That's good.
What I loved about him and the way we were able to use him in this episode was that he really sort of shook up Izzy's vision of what was going on with her and George.
Absolutely.
Brought a little bit of reality in, which I thought was really wonderful.
But he also gave perspective to each one of the characters when he first wakes up. You put them totally in context. You remember exactly where they are in terms of their food chain of life.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Because the way he kind of reduces Meredith's entire relationship over the course of the series
into
one sentence.
It was great.
Blowing hot and cold.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually just it's great. It's sort of like, thank you so much for actually kind of summarizing the show.
Exactly.
But I think it did actually. It does a fair amount for Izzy because she's so traumatized at this point with her relationship with George. She's so spun.
She has no idea what she's doing. And I just thought the moment where she comes in and Charlie's gone and he's sitting up in that wheelchair was just lovely. And I also really loved the funeral for Charlie.
I loved the phone. I loved a funeral for Charlie, too. I thought, actually, that was weirdly moving over the bed.
Yeah, it was so interesting to have sort of a vigil in which someone wasn't in the bed. They're talking to an empty bed. But I thought it was really moving and really funny. And I love that, you know, Alex's big insight is that Charlie hardly ever farted. You know what I mean? Like, they don't know this guy. He was a really old guy in bed. Now, like, he's gone. And they didn't really know anything about him except for Izzy, which I loved.
I think, which is really great. And then Izzy... It's that whole thing of Izzy and hope and thinking she can change things and that she could force really old guy to stay alive when, in fact, it's incredible to me that really old guy had his own time clock and he knew it.
Yeah, and it ties in really beautiful to George sort of having his own time
clock for when he can tell
Callie and how he's going to have to do this and she can't stop him.
Well, because at points in this episode, I totally sympathize with Izzy, but at the same time, you want to hit her over the head with a shovel because so much other stuff is going on.
But that's what I love about Izzy. Sympathize with her, but you do want to hit her over the head with a shovel at the same time.
Which is awesome. And I think is probably something we won't necessarily ever see on Grey's Anatomy.
We're never going to hit Izzy over the head with a shovel.
Because there's no reason to.
At least not for the next 3 seasons.
unless we need someone else with a coma.
Yes.
In a bed. Coma.
The other thing that I really liked was Christina sort of pretending to be sad and stealing surgeries from Meredith because she's pissed that Meredith's treating her with kid gloves.
Totally. I think it's also just, the expectation is, even with Christina, that she would be kind of screwed up about this entire thing.
Of course.
So I totally see Meredith
I actually feel that what happened at the end of last season with Christina and the wedding dress and the getting the choker off and the crying in Meredith's arms, I feel like that shook Meredith up a little bit.
Sure.
Like, it's probably one of the most vulnerable we've ever seen Christina, one of the most vulnerable moments for her ever seeing Christina. And for her, it was like she's trying to take care of her and Christina doesn't want to be taken care of, which I thought was just very lovely.
It is. And you know, it's a continuation of the two of them taking the honeymoon together.
Yes.
Which we never saw, but every once in a while just amuses me when I think about it in the back of my head.
Absolutely.
The two of them in Hawaii.
In a giant honeymoon suite.
Exactly. Just
eating all the food.
Eating the food from the minibar, watching television. And
drinking
probably
tiny little bottles of liquor.
Exactly. And probably not going out to the beach very much.
Exactly.
You know, because it's like.
Snorkeling once.
Exactly. But it was probably a really bad experience.
Like, well, it's sort of like we snorkeled. Now we've done that. Let's go back to the room and watch more television.
And order room service and just bring in bottles of wine.
Yeah, which is frankly how I like to vacation.
This is actually randomly based on business trips and holidays, I think, that you've taken.
Yes.
So, but anyway, that's just neither here nor there. But it kind of connects with the whole idea of they've gotten to be really close. I think Meredith is assuming that Christina would be processing the way that Meredith, in theory, would want to process. And in fact...
More the way Meredith thinks that a normal person would process. Not necessarily the way she would process.
Yeah, because Meredith truthfully does exactly what Christina does, which is says, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. I drowned, I came back from the dead, and my mother died, but really let me get back into surgery.
Yeah, but really just trying to take care of her, which I thought was very sweet. The other thing that we did was Mark and Richard deciding to do this tongue surgery that neither one of them actually really knows how to do. And I loved that whole idea of them feeling like you can't, you know, getting a little upset because they feel like George calls them old.
Absolutely.
And Alex, you know, says something old about world's oldest intern and deciding that they're going to do the surgery and then getting sort of shamed back into being grown-ups by Derek.
Which
I just thought that was wonderful.
Which is really, really great.
And on top of which, how much did we love that whole story with the woman who's like, I have so many things I want to say. And then basically what she wants to say is your butt looks bad in those pants.
Two puppies.
Yes.
Which I think...
Exactly. And your hair looks terrible and it's not... I mean, like, I just loved that like she just wanted to get real with her friends in a way that you don't get real with your friends sometimes.
Absolutely. And that even not ever being able to talk again doesn't necessarily justify doing.
Exactly.
When you kind of... But it's also the expectations of intimacy. It's the whole thing you expect Christina to... A normal person would be upset and would be moping around and would be clutching her gifts. Or a normal person would say to her friends... But I love you. The one thing I want to say to you right before I go into the knife so my tongue is removed from my skull is that I love you. And instead, this woman basically just wants to make sure the women aren't making the same mistake with their hygiene and clothing.
Exactly.
Which I think is really just incredibly awesome. And that there are these two guys who are so worried about their machismo and their youth, desperately around all these interns and all this sort of like macho surgery testosterone, desperately trying to prove that they still have it.
Yeah.
In the middle of all this, which I think is great.
I also love that we had Ed Herman joining us as the world's oldest intern.
So awesome. And we've been a huge, huge fan of his forever. And we never, ever thought we'd be able to get him to do this role.
And he was so charming and so lovely.
And sort of fell in love with
and
him.
And there's a little bit of fun to be had with this guy. It's very nice.
He's just amazingly terrific in this episode.
And I love that Alex has a weird code of honor that allows him to say that the guy smells like arthritis cream, but won't allow him to yell at him.
I know.
It's fascinating to me.
Well, it's kind of like talking about your grandfather who's sitting right next to you.
Exactly.
That strange thing you do with, like, older relatives, which is what are we going to do about Pop, and Pop is sitting right there.
And I also really love how that tied in with Bailey. The idea that there's a pecking order of things.
Exactly.
And that's the reason there's a pecking order is because that's how we save lives. And getting outside of the pecking order is to mess things up. And her realizing that she needs to be Callie's number two.
Exactly. Which I think is a big relief to poor Callie. Callie's got a lot on her plate right now.
I know. But that's also one of my favorite things is just Bailey coming into that room to sort of report and waiting for Callie to say or do something.
Yep.
Anything. And Callie just being sort of not unable to do anything but look at her paperwork. I love that.
I know. I think that's absolutely the case. And for Bailey to really understand that she doesn't have the job. So her job is to help somebody else do the job as best as possible, which is something she's been doing for a long time. And she sort of has to resign herself to doing it some more.
And then there's always that sort of awesome thing. We debated this a lot in the writer's room, the moment where Meredith has Lexi intubate the dead guy. We debated it a lot because it is one of those lessons that you teach, and it is a hard lesson. And we want, you know, you want your characters to be kind and lovely, but, you know, on Grey's, everyone's also really flawed. But what was kind of cool about Meredith having Lexi intubate this dead guy was that's what they do. That's what doctors do. And it may seem really cold to us on the outside, but that's exactly how those things work. You say, go ahead and try to save his life when they're practicing when you know the person's already dead.
Well, it serves an incredible purpose because, A, the person doesn't make a mistake, but you also you're in the situation with adrenaline and urgency. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it actually brings to mind when Addison, with Izzy,
take care of the baby all night
everybody
long.
Everybody knew was going to die.
And she told her that baby better be alive in the morning, and she left with that baby knowing that the baby would be dead.
And everybody thought that was really, really cruel, but in a way what it does is it also seems your suitability, your endurance, your suitability, your ability to actually stick to things, and what sort of
It also teaches you to do stuff, and it is horrifying, but you can. It's the only situation that can leave you alone to make mistakes, because they already know the outcome.
Exactly, so you're safe to actually make them.
And what makes it different is simply that the whole situation is compounded by the fact that Lexi's Meredith's half-sister that she doesn't want to know or talk to. But for Meredith, you know, what I loved was that she really was sort of she's just doing her job.
Well, and what's great about Lexi and Meredith is it's like Meredith who struggles not to take anything personally, Meredith mm-hmm. who tries to distance herself. And
Lexi actually takes everything personally.
Exactly. I mean, Meredith tries to distance herself and also tries to deflect by taking care of other people.
And I love the moment when, at the end, when she sits down with Lexi with Lexi's mom's death note and explains to her everything that happened with her mother when she died. Which I thought was great.
I love the moment with Bailey. When actually, that incredible moment where
Bailey
says,
yeah, I mean, you're her sister. You barely talk to her. You appear to hate her.
You are the doctor in charge.
Her mother is dead, and she thinks you hated her mother. I mean, I think it's really, really lovely.
I think that makes you realize where... That made me realize something in the moment, which was much more what Lexi's perspective is.
Mm-hmm.
Because although we have certainly a sense of Lexi's perspective, we don't know her as well as Meredith.
Exactly.
So I think Bailey is an incredibly helping hand in that moment as well.
That's really the excitement of this episode. I mean, all of those really cool relationships coming. I mean, there's some really good stuff coming. So when you see sort of how this episode plays, and then especially with the George and Callie of it all and Izzy of it all, you see what happens next week and watch how it builds. It's pretty good.
It is, and it's also, I mean, there's a relatively devastating moment right at the end of this episode, which is Alex actually outing George.
Yes.
Which I think also starts to set up things, which you will be seeing in the next couple of episodes in terms of where Alex's head is. But Alex can't lie.
That's part of Alex's code. is he can't lie. There's no way he's going to stand around and listen to people call George a hero when he feels like George is a repeater.
And in fact, gives the wrong impression that it's easier than it is, because what Alex learned through the experience with his older intern was that, in fact, there's a reason why there's a pecking order.
Exactly.
And he applies that in that situation to these interns, all of whom think he's being really mean. And when I first saw it, I was like, oh, God, that's incredibly harsh. But there's a reason he does it, because that's his code of ethics.
Yes.
Which I think we'll start to see more of, and we'll get tested and pressured as time goes on in the next couple of episodes.
In the next episode, which we're calling The Heart of the Matter, can't really tell you anything about what happens like we ever could.
No, we never can, which is, this is the part of the podcast where everybody probably just holds their head and starts screaming loudly to the universe. What
but
the
I can't say that it's a little high noon over at Grey's Anatomy.
It is. I think there's some, if you like the Westerns.
Yeah, there's some pretty amazing stuff going on.
There's a little World Wrestling Federation moment.
There's a little bit of magic.
There is. So I think at the very, very least, that's worth tuning in for the whole
episode.
At
the very least, you know, girl fight.
Thank you for saying it. Yes. I think you can look forward to a girl fight.
We want to give a shout out to a couple of podcast fans we met.
Jason and Josh,
who were really, really nice and told us that they were almost exclusively fans of the podcast. And since we've never actually met anyone in person, who's actually admitted to
listening to the podcast, I think in public, maybe
we
privately.
We're pretty sure that they're the only people listening, so we just wanted to say
both
hi.
Of them. And separately, each of them have said actually that they were big fans, so we wanted to acknowledge that very, very fact. Thank you. Please keep listening.
Please.
Tell your family to listen.
And your friends.
Keep us on the air, because we need the
podcasted nation. Yeah.
Okay. So as usual, we've actually spun out of control and driven into a ditch, which is how we like to end our podcast.
Always.
Wheels spinning, car flipped over.
This is Shonda.
This is Betsy.
Grey's Anatomy.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with more from the writers. In the meantime, check out abc.com for more content on both of Shonda's shows, Grey's Anatomy and Private Practice. Remember, Thursdays are Ugly and Grey on ABC. Ugly Betty at 8, Grey's Anatomy at 9. The Heart of the Matter airs Thursday, October 18th from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.